Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy. Everyone, welcome to this episode of what we're tentatively going to call 4-Player Plus. This is what we used to call spoiler cast. It's going to just involve conversations surrounding things that we may not be able to go into a whole lot of detail about on the actual podcast for obvious reasons. We don't want to spoil the shit out of new stuff when we're talking about games, but that's what this podcast is for. And today we're going to be talking about Horizon Zero Dawn. I am Nick Henderson. I'm joined today by two of our correspondents across the pond. Jager. Hello, Jager.
Hello.
Is it? I just so you know,
I keep going
back and forth.
It's only Brad calls me Jager, and he knows that's not how you pronounce it. He does it to...
Oh, so he's been like, leading me astray.
Yeah, he does it to piss me off.
Okay, wonderful. Jager, then. Hello, Jager. How are you?
Hello, I'm pretty good.
Wonderful. And we're also joined by George, our good friend.
Hello.
George. Also, it's very late for both of y'all. Thank you for being here.
That's all right.
And we're also joined by Kenton. Can I call you Kenton?
Yes, you can.
Wonderful. Well, Kenton is a member of our community and has been itching to talk about Horizon. I can't believe nobody else in this podcast other than myself, Brad, Crispy, Nolan, nobody played Horizon.
So, Kenton is basically the reason this spoiler cast / 4-player plus is happening.
Yes, yes, you have been dying for us to do this, so here we are. We needed to do it. I wanted to talk about this game. There's a lot to talk about, so I am thankful that you guys are here to talk about it. So, like I said, we're gonna talk about this. This is gonna be more of just a kind of a general discussion of the game, where we're not going to concern ourselves with spoilers. If they come up, we're not necessarily going to go into it with the intention of spoiling everything, but there's a good chance there's going to be quite a bit of spoiler discussion. So let's get started. I mean, just some kind of a general note. Everyone here has finished the game, right? And what did y'all think? Jager, just kind of give me an idea of what you thought of the game as a whole, I guess.
I beat the game in 30 hours. I didn't do as much side stuff as I would have
30
liked.
30 hours?
Yeah, I know. Why have you put in a lot more than that, have you?
And I mean, I did 50.
50? Fuck. Yeah, I started doing a lot of side stuff, but as I progressed into like larger areas, I was just thinking, like, I think it was Nier Automata was coming out like in a few days.
Oh, you mean one of the other games? One of the other mini games that's threatening to take up all of our time.
Hold on. Prince of the Universe in chat beat it in 14 hours. I don't feel so bad now.
14 hours? And Mr. Green... Okay, so by the way, for those who listening at home, when we record these spoiler casts, we record them. We give our supporters on Patreon an opportunity to spectate while we record them, because we record them in Discord. So we have supporters in there chatting with us while we're recording. And so people are chiming in with how many hours they finished it in. Mr. Green Toast took 62 hours to platinum it. I almost went for the platinum. I really considered it. In fact, I think I got to like, I think I only have like 3 or 4 trophies left to get to actually platinum the game. But I decided, I read what those were and I was like, nope, I think I'm good. I've actually never platinumed anything. So I was just like, I'm not going to start now. But I was really close with this game, which says something about the game, I believe. Carlos finished in 25. What about you, George?
I wasn't keeping track on how many hours I put in, but
you
I did,
son of a bitch.
But I did do most of the side stuff in terms of like the tool necks, the cauldrons, the side quests. I think some of the what they call errands as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did a lot of stuff in it. Maybe not some of the smaller stuff like picking up the mugs and the metal flowers. But yeah, I think it probably like 50 hours.
Yeah. One thing I really like about this game is that while I was playing it, there was a very they have a pretty detailed system of keeping track of all this stuff, and I had like a really clear idea in my head of what I wanted to accomplish before I considered myself done with the game, because I knew I wanted to do all the Tallnecks. I knew I wanted to find all of the what do they call them? The visions, not the what are they called?
Oh, the vantage points.
Yes, the vantage points. Like, I wanted to do all of those things. I had like a very clear checklist of the things I wanted to do, and as soon as I was done with that, it was like 50 hours, and I was like, I'm done. This is good. Good stopping point. So, Kenton, what about you? I know this is, you are very, very much into this game.
Yes. I believe I'm over 40 hours on it by the time that I beat it.
Yeah.
I did a lot of side stuff. At least, I think I kind of went at it like kind of what Jagger did, where a lot in the beginning, I did a whole bunch of side stuff, and then towards the end, I'm like, I just want to know how the story ends.
Yeah, like, and after a certain point, that story really starts to pick up, and it really becomes pretty interesting. Like, it was actually becoming painful for me to spend time doing the side stuff, because I really wanted to push forward and see what happened at the end of the actual main story. So, to be expected.
Not that any of the side stuff was lacking compared to the main story. A lot of the side quests were actually quite interesting.
Oh, yeah.
But from what I did anyway, but there was definitely the stuff that was like fetch questy or go here and kill this.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Although, but I'll be honest, when they tell
still
you...
Still quality content.
When they tell me to go here and kill this, I usually do it because killing things in this game is very fun, which we'll talk about shortly. But I guess...
Yeah, I want to talk about that, definitely.
but Kenton, I kind of want... So you were... Like Jaeger said, you were very into the idea of us doing a spoiler cast for this game. Do you clarify for that? Like, what about this game in particular made you want us to do a spoiler cast on it?
You know, I'm gonna throw this out there. I may have been a little annoying when I kept bringing this up, but like for whatever reason, this game resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think just because the world I find to be incredible, dealing with the way that the world is now, and then just piecing together what happened.
Yeah.
And that to me was just like the biggest thing. I just wanted to talk about it so much. It's just, there's so much there.
Well, it's a good thing because we also like to talk about video games. So that's what we're here to do. You know what's funny about this game? Robin was watching me play it for a while. She came over a few times while I was broadcasting. And like the third time she was watching me, like there was some kind of story event that happened. And she looked at me and she goes, wait, this is in the future? Like she had no idea. Like at first glance, she thought this took place like way in the past or something. And I was like, no. There's a pretty big overarching like sci-fi plot in this game that on the surface level, people may not be... you know, super keen on, but it was that twist that drew me in, especially at the beginning before the game even came out and people were, they were showing this game off for the first time, like this blend of like prehistoric like atmosphere with that sci-fi futuristic aspect of like the robots and shit was like really cool. A lot of the weird stuff that, which is why I'm into like Assassin's Creed, for a lot of the same reasons. I love that blend of like old and futuristic stuff. It speaks to me, maybe even more so in this game, because I think they do a really beautiful job of blending those two ideas in the story.
It kind of does that to the player at the start, to be honest, like that whole first area.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean that whole first area, you're basically like Robin. You don't really know what's on the outside.
Wait.
And then you cross those gates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're not entirely sure. You know there's like robots roaming around.
Yeah.
But then you go past those gates right at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, man.
And
pretty much that whole intro sequence at the beginning where you're playing as young Aloy, I thought was also a really... Like, they do a lot of world building up in that very beginning section all the way up into the point where she becomes an adult and she enters the trial. What do they call the trial again? Why am I having...
The proving.
Yeah.
Proving, yeah.
Yeah, that whole sequence where you're playing as a young Aloy and then she becomes an adult and then she's going into the proving, like that whole sequence did a lot of world building. Like the part where he takes Aloy up to the top of that mountain and you meet the I can't like remember anything right now as far as like the lore is like what they call the mother. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Like
the old mother, was it?
Yeah, like the old ladies at the top of the mountain. And yeah. And they're like talking to them, and they essentially like they have the ritual where they like call out the girl's name, and if they hear it spoken back to them, they think it's the gods telling them, like, and that's like a rite of passage, but they're really just hearing an echo, but they don't know what they're hearing. They don't know like scientifically why there's an echo, so they just think it's like God talking to them. And I thought that was really cool. And there's a lot of like little stuff like that sprinkled throughout the game that just made it really intriguing to me.
And I think my favorite part involving Allmother is because Aloy had her focus for so long, so she's more in tune with it than they are.
Yeah.
And the part after the proving, you know, where she is down in Allmother and, you know, they fight about it. Mm-hmm. And then she goes up to Allmother and it starts detecting her and the old lady's freaking out.
Yeah,
they, you know, Allmother has, she recognizes you, and Aloy's just like, it's a door.
Yeah, it's a fucking door with like an AI system in it, and they think it's God. Like,
that's what's good actually, because at that point, Aloy is basically the player. Like, we're with Aloy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we know what's going on, but they have no idea.
We're on the same page as Aloy, which is
which
is really cool as a player. But before we get into kind of like more of the, you know, a lot of stuff transpires in the story of this game, but I do kind of want to have a general conversation about the gameplay, because this game blew my fucking mind in terms of its gameplay. Like, of course, especially I'm referring to its combat. I don't think I've ever played anything as just fucking visceral and intense from a combat perspective as Horizon. In fact, it's gonna be, like, I'm thinking about like playing Prey right now, and I'm like, I'm excited to play Prey, but I'm like, it's not gonna be the same. It's not gonna be like, this has such a strategic element to it. Like, when you're,
as far as third person games where you use a bow, I think Horizon is up there, like, yeah, at the best.
Yeah,
yeah. I was gonna say I never used to like using bow and arrows in video games until I played this.
Wow. That's a bold statement, too.
Sold me on the bow and arrow.
Well,
and I just say,
that's
the
good.
The combat shines when you're fighting the robots.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I wasn't
fighting humanoids. I wasn't too impressed.
But yeah, I mean,
I just want to stop fighting humanoids. I just want to go back and fight another silver jaw. What are they called? Thunder jaw. That's it. Thunder jaw.
Yeah,
Thunder jaw. The big T-Rexes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I want to have a conversation about all the robots here in a second, because my God, but I think fighting humans in this game stood out. I didn't find it particularly bad. I found it to be kind of on par with most games where you're not, maybe not most games, but a lot of games where you're given a bow and arrow and you're fighting humanoid enemies. But the robots that you're fighting are so much fun and so engaging to fight that when you immediately turn around and have you fight a human character, suddenly it seems way, way, way less interesting. Like, to the point where it's just like, oh God, just no more of this. Give me more robots.
Yeah, the thing with fighting the robots is, like, the combat, it just feels so visceral. Like, you see the feedback. You feel the feedback when you're, like, your arrows.
When they find their mark, yeah.
Yeah, when they find out, you feel it. But when you go back and you're fighting humans, it just feels so floaty in comparison.
So this is actually funny, because you mentioned the rope caster, which is probably one of my favorite weapons, like new weapons I've ever played with in a game, like in a long time.
You see, I wanted to talk to you about that as well, because I watched a highlight of you taking down a Thunderjaw.
Yes.
Every time I took down a Thunderjaw, I didn't use the rope caster at all.
You are.
And I saw you.
Oh man, that's like
the second I unlocked the dodging ability. There's a dodging ability where you can hold the you hold circle,
yeah,
and it lets you dodge, like roll, as long as you hold the circle button down. As soon as I got that, that's what I depended on, and I just threw the rope caster away.
But the thing is, I could have gone without using the rope caster. The thing is, this game does give you pretty good wealth of options as far as how you approach combat, and I just personally love the feel of using the rope caster so much that I used it all the time.
It just seemed really weak to me in comparison
really
to
weak
other weapons.
Oh
yeah,
man.
Like, I'd have to put like 10 of them and just use all my ammo to get some, like, to get a Thunderjaw stuck to the ground.
Did you, so the weapons in the game have different levels of, I don't know what you want to call them. I mean, they have,
like, I had the
low, mid, and high tier weapons versions of all these weapons. I got, did you get the highest tier rope caster?
Yeah, I had it's called the Shadow Kaja.
Yes, and did you?
I had that one.
Okay, and I can't remember if the Shadow was weak. I can't remember if the Shadow Kaja one is the highest one, or if, because I also did the side quest where you go around and you do all of the
one you can get without doing the Hunter Lodges.
Okay,
I
did all of the Hunter Lodges to the point where I got I think there was a rope caster they give you for doing that, because essentially when you go around and you get all 15 sun medals from all the different hunting lodges, they give you like super high tier versions of like all the major weapons, one of which is a rope caster. And at that point, I mean that one was pretty powerful. But even then, like, I do agree, you are using when you're using the rope caster, you have to use like a ton of it to bring down, especially a Thunderjaw, because they're obviously the strongest in the game. But just that feeling of like seeing all these ropes like tethering them to the ground, and then watching them try to struggle against it, and then failing, and then watching them fall down, and like sparks go flying everywhere, like, it just looks so fucking cool. So I loved doing it. It was also really, really helpful when you were fighting the flying robots, the ones that like the little ones
or the big ones,
mostly the big one
the big ones were called Stormbirds.
Yeah, Stormbirds were a bitch. And
they were my favorite fights.
They are also some of my favorite fights as well. But pulling them to the ground using the rope caster was a lot of fun. Although it was funny because when I was talking with Kenton in Discord about the game, I kept mentioning things that I was doing and things that I was using, and every time he was like, "Oh, I didn't use that at all," and I'm just wondering how different our strategies were in this game, because I'm seeing a surprising amount of like variety in terms of the way people approach combat in this game. Kenton, what was the weapon you said you were using the most?
The thing that I did the most is, you mentioned the different tiers for each weapon.
Yeah.
The other thing that you got to mention is, like, for me, I loved freezing enemies because it would do so much damage while they're frozen.
Yeah.
That's what I would use a lot as well.
But not all enemies are weak to the frozen ammo. Like, sometimes it doesn't even affect them. Most of the time it does.
Well, if they're not weak to it, it takes like a bit more shots for it to actually activate, because all of them will freeze.
Yeah.
It just, if they're like not weak to it, it'll take more of them to hit that you have to hit them with, and then they'll freeze.
Yeah. Like it's filling up that bar as you're hitting them with it. And once it's complete, then it activates and they're under that status effect, which is actually really good UI design as well. Like, cause it's non-intrusive. It's like super small, but it's super easy to tell as you're hitting them, like when that it's going to activate that status effect, like whether it's fire or ice or whatever. Like, it was super unintrusive, but super easy to interpret and read and everything, which was cool. But anyways, yeah, you like to freeze dudes.
Yeah, because there is the second level slingshot enables you to slingshot the frozen orbs.
Yes.
But that's the only one.
The slingshot was so good.
I know. And that's the only one that'll do it, though, because I got the third level, and I'm like, well, these are just like explosion and static. I don't want that. So I went back to the lower one, just because, for me, I found freezing enemies, especially big ones, to be a lot easier. Like the Thunderjaw, for example.
Yeah.
You freeze the Thunderjaw, and the Thunderjaw's got that. He's got that giant laser on his side that shoots those discs out.
Yes.
And those lasers come down. You freeze him, and you have that, and you shoot that off of him, you can go and pick it up.
Yeah. That's exactly, that's my tactic for taking down a Thunderjaw.
Yes.
I would shoot that off, and I would literally tear it apart in seconds using that disc thrower.
Yes, the ability to take enemies apart piece by piece and even use their own weapons against them was one of my favorite things about this game. It was incredible. And one of the one of the Hunter's Lodge challenges, in fact, the last one that I did in the game, was you have to fight a Thunderjaw, but you have to ensnare, or what do they call it when you take over the enemies? When you like
override, you have, is that it?
Yeah,
yeah. When you have to override them. Yeah, so you have to override two of the was it two Ravagers? Those are the big tiger looking things, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to override two Ravagers and use it in a fight against a Thunderjaw. And that, first of all, you have to sneak around the Thunder. You only have like 2 minutes to do it. You have to sneak around the Thunderjaw, override one of the Ravagers, and then the other one's clear across the other side of the map. On the other side of the Thunderjaw, so you have to sneak around it, override the other one, and then by the time you do that, you only have like a minute and 15 seconds or something left to do it, and then you just wait for the Ravagers to attack the Thunderjaw, and then I just would shoot off that disc launcher, pick it up, and then just destroy it. Like, just, that thing shreds the Thunderjaw. Actually, yeah, it shreds anything, which was great, because as soon as the Thunderjaw dropped, I was suddenly stuck with two Ravagers that wanted to kill me, and that also tore them apart, which is great. But like, that was like one of my favorite fights in the entire game, because there was the pressure of having to do it in time limit, and then you're overriding dudes and they're fighting Thunderjaw. Like, that shit gets crazy. I fucking love it.
The thing with freezing things as well, it actually lowered their defense.
Yes.
So if you froze a Thunderjaw and picked up its weapon,
it'd do even more damage.
Literally drop in seconds.
Wow.
It dies in like four of those hits.
And if you compare that to like the first time you encounter each one of these different robots, oh man, like I remember the first time I came across a Stormbird.
Yeah,
that fight must have been going on for like half hour.
Dude, the first time I tried to fight a Stormbird, I had to stop and run away because I think I was probably level like.
Did you run out of ammo?
Yeah. Well, I ran out of ammo, and I would realize that the damage I was doing was like inconsequential, and I was like, this is not going to end well. So I just left. But yeah, when I finally got around to it, I did max out the level. I hit the level cap in this game, which I don't do very often when I'm playing games with a level cap. So at the very end, and I was fighting, you know, Stormbirds left and right, it was much, it was easier, but man, those things are even tough when you're like max level. But, honestly, the robot that I had the hardest time fighting in this game was the one that goes underground, like the worm looking thing.
The rock breaker.
Yeah, because you can't really freeze those because they usually go underground way faster than you can delve out damage. And you can't get enough shots in to freeze it before it goes underground, which I'm pretty sure clears out the meter when they go underground. So that wasn't really a viable strategy against those things. And they'll detect your movement on the ground. So if you're like running, they'll know exactly where you are, and they'll come up from underneath you or like really close to you and attack you. So those were kind of a pain in the dick. I didn't like fighting those very much. In fact, those were the one creature. I mean, I appreciate the design of the enemy. In fact, I think all the enemy design in this game is fantastic, but that is the one enemy in this game where I was like, this just doesn't feel fun because of the fact that it can go underground.
Really? I loved fighting that thing. That thing was a blast. Because, I mean, you said there is a viable strategy for freezing it because that's how I killed it. I mean, just...
How did you land enough shots before it went underground? Because the moment they go underground, it clears out that meter.
Because eventually, it will surface for a while.
But, like, the moment they would surface and I would start hitting them with anything, they would, like, go underground, like, almost immediately.
Are you sure it went away? Because I remember hitting them with it. Like, they would come up, and I would shoot it, and then I'd move, so they would come at me again, and I would shoot it again.
I'll be honest, I only fought, like, two of these things, because I went about trying to avoid... I fought the one that you have to fight in, like, the mission. There was a quest where you had to fight one. And then I came across an area that had two of them, and I fought them for, like, 20 minutes, and then I was like, fuck this, and I left. I think that's the only enemy in the game where I think I legit only... killed one of them in the entire game.
You can actually stop them from digging if you take out their legs.
They have legs?
Yeah.
Man. Maybe I need to go back because I just wrote them off after like two bad experiences. I was like,
couple tier blast arrows, best fucking item in the game, by the way.
Yeah, let's talk about the fucking arrow types. The tear blast arrows are incredible. And then there's is it called the tear blaster? Where it's not arrows, but it just shoots like an energy wave or an audio wave or something that just like rattles them and knocks off pieces of their armor. Like,
yeah,
that thing was cool.
And I didn't use those either.
You didn't use those either?
No.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't know they existed.
What?
That was like my bread and butter.
You didn't know they existed?
Is that something that you buy from the merchant, or is it something you find in? Well,
yeah, pretty sure
I didn't buy much from the merchant though.
Oh my goodness, guys! Oh my goodness! Yeah, the Terror Blaster is like it's just like a staff that you point at stuff, and then it shoots like an energy wave, and as soon as it hits them, it just starts knocking pieces of their armor off. It's pretty damn great. Also, you get, like I said, when you do all the hunting lodges, you get enhanced versions of all of those different kinds of items. You do also eventually get ice arrows. So if you want to freeze things without using the slingshot, because the slingshot is obviously a little bit slower, but...
See, I would have loved that.
Yeah, the ice arrows are fantastic, and they were some of my favorite things to use in the game as well. But I didn't get those till close to the end, so it does require you putting in quite... I mean, I think they knew how much of an advantage the ice arrows could give you potentially in combat, so they saved those for pretty close to the end, I think. Also, there was an arrow type. I don't even know what it does. I don't know if y'all got this arrow type, but it's like a poison arrow. Did y'all get this?
Nope.
Okay. I remember seeing it in the shop, but I would have had to give up my tear blast arrows.
Gotcha.
My tear blast arrows, sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't bother with it.
I don't even know what it does, because it didn't look like it was damaging it, but like, so I was fighting a Stormbird, and I pulled out my poison arrows. I'm gonna call them poison, because they're green, and I fired an arrow at it. It hit one hit, and like, the Stormbird started glowing green, and like, all this like, green foggy stuff was like, envelops it, and then it like, fell to the ground, and it was just like, it's a corrosive arrow. Mr. Green arrow, or Mr. Green Toast in chat says it's a corrosive arrow.
Is it the corruption arrow you're talking about?
He says corrosive. I don't know. The thing is, it doesn't look like it was doing much damage, but it definitely slowed the Stormbird down to the point where I could deliver more blows. And that seemed pretty damn useful. And I think that was one of the arrows that you can also get with the enhanced bow at the end when you do all the hunting lodge challenges. But I don't know what that was, but I was using it because it was doing something that seemed to help in combat. I just could not put my finger on exactly how it was helping me, but it was. What are some of the other weapons? So we have slingshot, we have bow, we have the tear blaster. What was that, George?
I was going to say that I've been telling about all the stuff that I haven't been using. One of the things that I did use a lot, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's the thing where you can set down like an explosive wire by putting it at one point and then putting it at another.
Yeah, the tripcaster. Yeah.
The tripcaster, yeah. I used that a lot.
You use that one a lot?
Yeah.
I use that quite a bit.
That thing is good.
I use that kind of a lot more towards the beginning of the game, and as I got stronger, I kind of stopped using it, and then I used it a few times at the end. But like, there was a large like 30-hour chunk of that game where I didn't even touch the tripcaster.
I used the tripcaster mostly against the stalkers.
Invisible guys.
Let's talk about the stalkers, because fuck those things. But they're great. They're great fun to fight.
Panthers.
Yeah, but they're invisible panthers, George. There's a difference,
George.
Invisible robot panthers, which, by the way, there's a hunting lodge challenge where you have to take down a bunch of those while in an area being patrolled by like a bunch of the crab looking ones with the things on their back. But you have to take down those while you're being stalked by the stalkers. So those things tend to complicate just about every situation that they're involved in, but they're so much fun to fight, and they're so fast, and dodging those things, like, in there is so much satisfaction I got in this game out of like dodging enemies the last possible second, like rolling out of the way, and this, like, almost every time a stalker came at me and I dodged out of the way, I was like, that was so fucking satisfying, because you can the game controls and it feels so fluid that you could like dodge out of the way, and then you could the speed at which you could pull out your bow and then actually hit an enemy felt so good, and that's what made fighting the stalkers for me like that might be one of my favorite enemies to fight in this game. I almost forgot about him, but the fact that they can go invisible and they're super fast and super agile made those super fun to fight. Carlos says he never liked the dodge. You people are all crazy.
I always like dodging while you're crafting arrow because everything's so slow, and then you're just like, you're crafting your arrow. All of a sudden, one lunges at you, and you're like, "Fuck!" So you're just dodging in slow motion. It just looks cool.
Yeah, you're like, you're in the middle of like crafting an arrow, and there's just something flying at you in slow motion. You're like, "Just bear with me for a second. I'm crafting some arrows. Hold your horses."
When you say the dodge, do you mean the slide or the roll?
The roll.
I mean the roll, but I like the slide as well. I mean, it has kind of the same effect. If you pull out a bow and arrow while you're sliding, it'll go into slow-mo as well, which was cool. It felt very Vanquish-esque.
Yeah,
The roll was a lot better once you unlocked the ability to... Yeah, basically, but... you held circle, and it, depending on how long you held circle, that's how far you would roll.
I didn't even get that upgrade.
Oh, wow. It's like the difference between a fat roll and a fast roll in a Dark Souls game.
Maybe it's just the way that I played, but I never really had a problem with that.
Basically, you get more iframes in your roll, which is always good.
Oh, and okay, so Mr. Green Toast did a little research for us here. He says he looked up the Corruption Arrow, which is one I mentioned a second ago. He says an arrow type used by the Warbow deals no damage and high corruption severity on impact. Machines corrupted by this arrow will be aggressive against other machines while this effect lasts and can be used to temporarily turn the odds in the player's favor. That's what it was doing. It was making
Seems pretty cool.
Yeah, so I use that on a Thunderjaw. Like that shit.
Oh my.
And it works wonders. So yeah, like I guess that's what it was doing, because it did seem like it was focusing on me less, so I guess it was attacking other enemies, which was cool.
It's basically like a long distance override, but you just need to be careful.
Yeah, and
it's basically the same override as what the human enemies use.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, because you do run across enemies that have corrupted or overridden enemies.
All the corruption zones. It's those arrows are basically that.
Yeah, except when you use the arrow, it's green instead of red. Like, when you come across corrupted machines out in the world, they're glowing red. But when you use the corruption arrow, it turns them green. But it's kind of the same effect. Yep. And it makes them fight each other, which is cool. What else, George? What else did you not use in this game?
I actually, towards the end, I was kind of just using the bow and arrow. And you get, like, different arrow types, but... Yeah. I just really like the satisfaction of, I think I got quite good at picking off the particular parts of an enemy that would expose weak points. Like just today, to refresh my memory of the game, I was going back and I was fighting some glint hawks, I think they're called.
Yes, the smaller flying ones.
Yeah, and you can...
They're the most annoying enemies.
Yeah, they can be annoying. But I found that there's like a panel they have on their belly, and if you can get that off... There's some kind of like ice thing. I don't know if it's different elements for different ones, but if you then hit that, they then just explode, fall to the ground, and then you can go in for a critical finish.
Yeah.
So I think it's stuff like that. I don't know if I was relying on any particular weapons, but it was more just picking off the different parts strategically, or like focusing, because sometimes you'll like see something on an enemy and it's like, I bet if I can get that off, then it will give me a huge advantage. So it's kind of like picking away at the different parts.
Yeah, that's kind of the crux of why I love the combat in this game so much. Because as you get better at it, you start to focus your... It becomes less about dealing as much damage as quickly as you can, and more about finding the weak points and exploiting them as quick as you can.
It's cool to see that we all still have different ways of taking down enemies too.
Yeah.
Like for me, Glint Hawks, I would set them on fire, and that would take them to the ground. Then I'd just critical hit them with my spear.
Yeah.
That was my way of taking them down.
There are lots of different options. And do I remember, Kenton, did you tell me you weren't using Terror Blast arrows ever?
Yeah, I didn't use those. I used them insane. One time after you brought them up. I'm like, well, I'll check them. And I'm just like, whatever.
You're killing
them. That's like
me,
the coolest weapon.
I mean, yeah, it's cool because it knocks all the parts off, but I don't know. It's cool to see, but
does anybody here remember playing Binary Domain?
Yes.
And remember how satisfying shooting robots in that game was?
Exactly.
Because all the little tiny pieces are flying off. That is exactly what Horizon does for me. Like it hits the same notes, but like in a more explosive way, because you're fighting obviously bigger, more aggressive enemies in this game. But watching, and like there's so, like it's not just like two or three parts that will fall off of enemies. Like they are just made. There's probably even like on something as small as a stalker, which is like a panther looking thing. Like you could knock off like 20 or 30 different individual pieces off of that one enemy to the point where like by the time you finish fighting it, it could look considerably smaller than it did when you were fighting it when you started, because it was covered in armor that you just took. You took all of it off. Like that is so fucking cool. And that's applicable to every enemy in the game. Like they all have tons of different things. And the moment you would like shoot an armor piece and it would fly off, and suddenly you see like one of those glowing, canisters somewhere like tucked up underneath its armor or like on its back or something. And you're like, well, I'm shooting that next. Like that always leads to a super satisfying, like super visceral animation that just made this combat so, so satisfying.
Yeah, you're not kind of just pouring damage into one great like chunk of an enemy, if that makes sense. It's like you're strategically picking off these different pieces that makes it so much more satisfying, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like I think about the fact that like Brad hasn't played this. I know Crispy started playing some of it, but like I feel like Brad would like.
Crispy seemed like he was really into it.
Like
as
Brad loved the Crispy was really into it, and I'm sure he will find the time to play it at some point. But like. Brad loved Binary Domain when that game came out for a lot of the reasons we were just talking about, and I think he would particularly enjoy that strategic element of taking off the pieces. So I was like, "What are you doing to me, Brad? Fucking play this game! It's killing me." This is a little bit more story related. It's still kind of a side quest, but it was one of the side quests that came up. Like I kept hearing people talk about it because you end up talking to a lot of people in this game. There's a lot of NPCs, there's a lot of villages, there's a lot of different tribes throughout the world, which is cool. That's another thing I really loved about this game, is how all these different tribes had such different ways of life and how they were interconnected, and some of them hated other ones for particular reasons, and it just felt like a very real living world, which was cool. But there was one that kept coming up multiple times over the course of the game, and that was the Red Maw. Did y'all do the red?
I was just thinking about that. Yes, I did that one.
That was, I think that might go down as like one of my favorite, like, I don't know if I want to call it a boss fight. It felt like a boss fight because they were leading up to it so much throughout the entire game. But you keep hearing about this like legendary Thunderjaw that like has killed hundreds of people, like pretty much everyone that's gone after to try and take it down. And of course, the Karja, which are one of the major tribes living in this game, there's a big focus around hunting, and so they put a lot of weight on people who can go out and hunt these robots throughout the world. So like they would talk about Red Maw throughout the entire game, and then you finally come across at the end, you meet someone, and then it ends up leading to a fight with Red Maw. And it's like it's a Thunderjaw, but it's like covered in like spears and arrows, and like parts of it are hanging off because it's been attacked for years and years. But other than that, it's just kind of a really aggressive Thunderjaw. But man, that fight was so fucking good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, can I be honest here?
Yes.
I did that quest, and they do a very good job of hyping you up for that fight with the Red Maw.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I was a little disappointed.
Because it was just a Thunderjaw at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I was hoping this Thunderjaw was going to be a bit more, I don't know how to put it, like, I thought it was maybe going to be just, like, a little different. Like, it's cool fighting the Thunderjaw because you can see all the weapons that are stuck in its body, and that's cool, but I was a little disappointed because at the end of the day, it's still a Thunderjaw, he just has red eyes.
Yeah, yeah. It may have had more health than your typical Thunderjaw. I remember that fight taking quite a bit longer than any other Thunderjaw I fought in the entire game. But his strategies were predominantly the same. I think what I liked about it the most was just that, unlike pretty much any other enemy in the game, this particular one had a backstory. I had this build up. I knew what had come before it and I knew its history, which was just what felt different about it. So like when I finally took it down, it was like the sense of accomplishment felt different because of that history. And I kind of wish they did that more in the
I
game.
I almost feel like that should have been the first Fundajord that you came across. You know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that would have made it feel a little bit more impactful, because then you know, at that point you would not have fought a Thunderjaw. You know what the funny thing is? The first Thunderjaw I actually fought in the game was the one that you find in the underground, what are they? The vaults? What are they, vaults?
The cauldrons.
The cauldron, so, yes.
Yeah.
So like the hidden cauldrons around the world. I found like the highest level cauldron, like I think I did that one like second. And you literally fight a Thunderjaw in like a super tiny little room. Like it barely, I'm surprised it could even move around, but like that made it especially challenging. But that was my first Thunderjaw I actually fought to the death, which I felt like it prepared me for like the rest of the Thunderjaws in the game, because I was like, if I can fight a Thunderjaw in this tiny ass little space and win, then I think I'm good.
I had the complete opposite experience, actually. On my first Thunderjaw, I just found, hadn't seen any of them before, completely not part of any quest,
yeah,
just out exploring the world. And it was being fought by like 20 other different, like smaller robots.
Yeah.
And I just like, I saw it and it was so cool, because it's like, I am not ready to fight this thing. So I just kind of watched what was going on for a bit, watched it just decimating all of these smaller robots. I was like, I'm going to run now.
Yeah.
And yeah, but then, because is the red more the one that you fight in the little canyon desert area on the very far left of the map?
No, red maw, you end up going on a quest and it leads you into this like jungle, like, and it's like knocking over trees and shit.
Okay.
It's easy to identify because it's literally stuck. It's like a pincushion of spears. Like there's spears sticking out of its side and its face and like pieces of armor are falling. Like it's not entirely covered in armor. You can see like other like pieces that have already been knocked off by other hunters and stuff. But it's part of a specific quest that you don't. I think the only way you can find Red Maw is if you actually follow that quest line. I think it would have been cool if you hear these legends about Red Maw and then you can find him just naturally in the world, rather than having to trigger this like linear path that opens up to fight him. Because it would have been so cool to just hear all these stories about him and then just walk around a corner and be like, oh, well, that's Red Maw. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like, that would have been, I think that would have been better personally, but hey, the fight was still fun and it was still a really cool, unique enemy.
Yeah. Not to take away from the side quests, because like we've said, the side quests in this game are very good, and leading up to that fight, it definitely does a good job of drawing you in.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the big hunting club there in the town.
Yeah.
And then you read the notes that are laying about Red Maw, and it tells you like how many hunter parties have been sent out over this period of time and how almost none of them came back, and then it keeps building and building.
Yeah, it makes you really scared to actually fight this thing, which, you know, when you think about it, you're right. Like by the time I had read like four or five different notes about all these people that had died trying to fight this thing, I thought in my head it was probably going to be a bit more significant than what it ultimately ended up being. But like I said, that just the fact that they gave it that history was really cool. So I think it's funny, we've talked so long about this game, but we haven't really even touched on the actual story of the game, which,
yeah, we've just been talking combat.
Yeah, which should tell you something. The combat in this game is fucking superb. It's probably the standard by which I'm going to judge a lot of the combat in games I play this year. But there is actually a really, in my opinion, a really good story to be found here that, for the most part, delivers all the way up until the very end. What did y'all think of Aloy as a main character?
One of the best characters in a long time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought she was great.
She's really well voiced, I think, by is it Ashley?
Yeah, Birch? Ashley Birch.
She, considering how many lines she has, and like in some other games, like, you know, Male Shepard in Mass Effect, and you can tell that after a while they're probably just reading this stuff off without really thinking about it.
Yeah.
She gives like a really good performance for that character throughout the entire thing, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah, she seems pretty committed to portraying that character well from beginning to end.
I think, in my opinion, the best thing that she did as Aloy in the game is, and I don't know if you guys have done this, and in the beginning of the game, you know, you're with Rost, and eventually he dies.
Yeah, that's your, like, father figure. I think I know where you're going, and I think, if I'm right, I did do this, but keep going.
I'm pretty sure I did as well.
When you can go back to the house, and yeah. His grave is
yes.
there.
Yes.
When she talks to the grave, like, I did it a lot just because she does it so well with her emotions.
Yeah, it's a pretty...
And I just sit there and listen. It's just so good.
It's a pretty impressive performance, especially considering she's having a one-way conversation with a gravestone.
The only thing that was missing in that moment was should be sitting at the grave. I know it's a very minor niggle, but...
She gets on her knees, though. She kneels.
Yeah, I think she was kneeling before. Yeah, I think so.
Standing there, like, it was out in the world. Like, there was no cutscene or anything.
No, I swear to God. I swear she gets on her knees and talks about it.
Someone in chat, go find that on YouTube. That'd be a great help. I am curious, because I think she kneels as well. But yeah... Overall, that was a really great scene. I didn't know. I found that was literally one of the last things I did before I went and fought, or I went and finished the game. And it wasn't because I felt like I was like, I should go back and see what's going on. It was literally I was trying to do another side quest or an errand or something. And I ended up, I was trying to just find something in that general region. And I wandered by it and I was like, what is that? And I walked over. I was like, oh, wait, I'm back at the cabin from the beginning of the game. And that's Ross Grave. And then I just triggered it. And then it's like a 10-minute monologue she has with the grave. And it's really convincing. And
Prince posted a YouTube video in the screenshot. She's kneeling down.
Yeah, I'm watching it. She does kneel.
Yeah.
Well, then.
But she's not on her knees. She's kneeling. There's a difference.
She's doing that thing like when you're an adult and you're going to talk to a kid and you like hunch down low. That's kind of what she's doing.
Which is funny because she's talking to a...
There must have been a moment like you could visit the grave after again as well, because I just remember just standing there and her talking to it. Just like out in the world.
Yeah. I don't know. The world may never know.
I brought this up before the podcast started, but I think my favorite characters in the entire game is Nil. The guy you meet when you get to the first bandit camp. Because he's just batshit insane.
Wait, who was that?
He's the guy who's in like that white armor. It kind of looks like a samurai armor. And you have to do the bandit camp with him. And he's talking about how for him it's a sport. And how he just loves to kill. So he's killing them for sport, basically.
Oh, did you see that quest?
Oh, that guy.
No, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that if you do all the bandit caps, you actually get a side quest with him, and I'm gonna have to go do that now because he's amazing.
Oh, if you do all the bandit caps, you get to fight him at the end and kill him.
Man, he's so fucking cool. I don't know why, but I just like how fucking crazy he is.
Oh man, bandit caps were one of the things I did not decide to do all of. Maybe I should go back and do it. I do remember meeting that guy though. I just didn't know there was a whole lot more to him, so that's cool. I think there were a lot of actually really great side characters in this game, including like one of the other major characters in this game, who is played by, remind me his name, from The Wire. What's his
Silence?
Name? Is that yeah, Silence. Name? But what's his real name? Lance Reddick, thank you, Mr. Greentos. Appreciate it. Lance Reddick, he's from The Wire. He was also recently in Quantum Break, if y'all played that. He was also in that. I think he was really good in that as well. He's doing a lot of video game parts these days.
He's doing good.
He's doing pretty good. I mean, he's kind of typecast. He plays kind of the same type of character in most things, but he does it pretty well. So I like it. So I kind of want to have some conversation about the overarching story of this game, because it deals with the apocalypse in a pretty unique way. Like, I remember, so this whole thing is obviously, like, going into it, I kind of knew this was obviously going to be like, you know, in the past humans got too advanced for their own good and they ended up making a mistake, and then AI, it's kind of like Terminator, the fucking robots became sentient and then ended up taking over the planet, essentially. But it kind of goes deeper than that, and you end up finding out about Zero Dawn, which is the project that they put into, or the operation they put into place to kind of counteract that. But what I thought was really unique about this was that, so you find out about midway through the game that, you know, we created these robots that feed on biofuel, and then what do they call it? An exploit or something inside of them that we didn't foresee that allowed them to kind of bypass the things that are supposed to keep them under control. And they eventually got out of hand and they started spreading and multiplying faster than we could do anything about. And then eventually got to the point where they realized that all life on Earth is going to be wiped out. So obviously the scientist who created them was like, well, the contingency plan is this project that, called Zero Dawn. And you don't really know what Zero Dawn is. You just know that they tried to do this to counteract the apocalypse. But what I did not expect was that when you find out what Zero Dawn actually is, it wasn't really a contingency plan at all. It was more of just a guarantee that life can go on after humans are extinct kind of thing.
But yeah, it's basically like we're fucked. There's nothing we can do, so let's try to do something for the future.
Yeah, and you start finding all of these audio files as you're exploring these ancient, like, decrepit labs where they were working on Zero Dawn, and it's people coming to the realization that they're gonna die, even though they're trying to, like, they're working on something that is they thought was going to save humanity, but it's really inevitable. Everyone's going to die. This is just more of a way to ensure that life will continue beyond whatever happens after the humans are extinct. And like some of the shit that you find and you hear in these audio logs where people are talking about trying to accept the fact that they're going to die or that they're never going to see their families again. There's even some people that like, hey, we can tell you what this is, but once we tell you, there's no going back. And once we tell you, you have to be a part of this project. There's no choice. You can either choose to work on it or die. Like, they would actually, because they don't want it. They didn't want that information getting out and spreading mass panic and making people outside in the outside world realizing that death is inevitable. So they basically say, if we tell you what this is, you're in it for good, and there's nothing you can do about it. And they even say, if you choose not to be a part of it, here's a gun. Kill yourself, because that's there's no other option.
Yeah, the grim thing about it is when you hear the audio, when you watch the audio video mm-hmm. of the general guy who's talking about it, and he's basically like, no one else outside knows this. Everything that we're telling them is join the fight so we can fight the robots and win, while they don't know that what they're doing is inevitably hopeless. They're all gonna die anyway, but they don't know that. And when I heard that, I'm like, man, that's fucked.
Yeah, I've never seen a story about the apocalypse where it handles it in quite the same way. Like, usually humans are portrayed as being very hopeful and then finding some way to overcome it, or at least finding a way to stop it before it completely wipes out the human race. But this was very much just like the kind of the twist of the game, as you find out, no, there's mathematically speaking, there is absolutely nothing we can do to stop these machines from wiping out the planet. Because they feed on biofuel, so they just like churn through, you know, trees and leaves and humans and animals, and they turn it into fuel, and they use that to feed or to power themselves and then reproduce and make other machines at a rate that is completely, mathematically, there's no way they can stop it. And when that reality sets in, it was kind of just like, oh, fuck. But then it also begs the question, then how are there people? Which is another aspect of the story, which ends up being really interesting. But you end up, the whole thing ends up being about this, what did they call them? They had like seven different, what do they call them? It was like there are like seven different like names for these different programs within Zero Dawn that served different purposes for the project that would activate once the extinction level event happens. but one of them was called Hades. I don't remember what all the others were called or what their
well, they were all part of Horizon Zero. Project Zero Dawn. Sorry.
Yeah, and they all serve very different, unique purposes. The bad guy of the game ultimately ends up kind of being this one called Hades, which was basically designed to reset Zero Dawn if something doesn't go according to plan, and it does this by wiping out life and starting fresh, like starting brand new. But that somehow gets triggered, and that's what you're ultimately end up trying. You're trying to stop in this game.
You brought that up, and so did Mr. Green Toast. Yeah, because there's Hades, it's the bad one, and then Gaia, who brings the world back to normal. And then there was the Apollo system, which is basically all of the knowledge that they knew at that point that they put in there. But then the guy who created the Peacekeeper robots that this issue was caused by destroyed that.
Yeah.
Destroyed the Apollo education system before Gaia and stuff was activated. So that one wasn't even in the picture, which is why everyone in the game is basically like, you know, very...
They don't
uneducated.
Have, yeah, they don't have the knowledge. Point. So they essentially had the, like, they go into detail in the game, obviously, but it's essentially designed to like grow human beings, educate the human beings, so that they can go out into the world and repopulate it, with that knowledge. And then Gaia was supposed to kind of facilitate all of this. And if something goes wrong, Hades is triggered to clear everything out, as that includes killing all of the humans they've cloned, eliminating all of the life that they've grown to kind of reset and start fresh if something goes wrong. But Hades gets triggered, and that's what you're ultimately trying to stop from happening at the end of the game. Which is what leads to that, you know, that final war in the city of Meridian, where you actually fight Hades, and which that was kind of weird. But overall, that whole story. And what was the Kenton? Do you remember the? So you eventually go. There's a room that has like a council of like a bunch of people that are part of Project Zero Dawn, and then there's the one guy who's like dissenting, and he ends up killing everyone on the council. But I don't remember exactly what his goal of that action was.
Is that Ted Farrow?
Yeah, Ted Farrow is the one who killed them.
Yeah. So, but he was trying to stop something because he was...
He killed them because if he wouldn't have killed them, then they would have restored the Apollo education system. That is why he killed them. During that scene, one of them actually tries to get back in with the computer.
Yeah.
And that's when he says, you know, there's no point. And then he kills them so they don't try to restore the Apollo system.
Gotcha. I can't remember why he was... He was losing his mind and he was starting to go crazy, but...
Doesn't that happen after Elizabeth Sobeck sacrifices herself so the robots can't get in or discover where they are or something like that? And then... I got the impression that Ted and Elizabeth were supposed to be quite close. So I don't know if that had something to do with it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
From what I remember in the logs that I read, she used to work for Ted Farrow when the Peacekeepers were being made.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't like the way that it was going. So she left to go make her own own green peace company. And so that's where they come in together. They used to work together.
Yeah, because you end up, when you first get that bit of information about when you first, like, Ted calls Elizabeth into his office, and this is, like, the first time they've seen each other since, I guess, she stopped working with him. And she comes back in, and he's like, look, I fucked up. I caused this thing that might be the end of humanity. You gotta help me here. And she's fucking pissed. And that's when she ends up giving the idea or introducing the concept of Project Zero Dawn. He's like, whatever, if you think that'll do it, then do it. But he is kind of, from that point forward, he's kind of just fucking falling off the rails and losing his mind. And then, like you said, at some point after Zero Dawn is already being worked on, Elizabeth ends up locking herself outside because of a exploit that would allow the machines to get in and kill everybody. So she ends up locking the door from the outside so they can't get in, but she ends up sacrificing herself, which was cool because she says, they ask you, like, they're talking to her after she locks herself outside, and they're like, oh my god, she's gonna die. And she's like, I don't like goodbyes and all this stuff. And then they say, what are you gonna do? And she's like, well, I've always wanted to go home. And like the very last shot of this game is Aloy trying to find out what she meant by I would like to go home, and she finds her actual childhood home, which is like overgrown obviously with plant life and everything, and she finds her body like sitting on a bench in like the suit that she was wearing when she locked herself outside. I don't know, I just thought that whole last scene was actually really a really nice way of closing that game out.
Yeah, that part was cool. I gotta bring this up because we're talking about Elizabeth. Is there anyone else other than me that was hoping by a little tiny margin that Elizabeth would somehow still be alive, even though it's 900 years in the future?
I was thinking about that, but I was also trying to manage my expectations because it was 900 years later. didn't think that was realistically going to happen, but
I was thinking like a sort of AI. Elizabeth.
I think that would have cheapened it though a little bit. I think if she had somehow been alive, I feel like the writing would have suffered a little bit, because I feel like the way in which they wrote this story was actually really well thought out. I think they covered most of their bases. I wouldn't say there's not a lot of what people would probably refer to as gaping narrative holes. Because of that, by the very end, I felt like it was kind of like The Last of Us for me, where I feel like they thought about so many different aspects of that story, and they didn't compromise storytelling for the sake of giving people a happy ending or anything. They just kind of wrote the story that felt right. And I feel like maybe not the same. I think The Last of Us is still kind of the high benchmark for writing in games. Like that, I think in a lot of ways, the story in that game is almost perfect. And I'm not saying this story is perfect really by any means, but It scratched the same itch. It gave me the same vibe as The Last of Us, because I don't think they compromised the story they were telling to play to people's expectations of like, oh, I want her to be alive, or I want her to, you know, fall in love or whatever the fuck. They just kind of told the story that felt the most organic.
The thing with the story that I found is when you're getting, especially towards the latter half of it, you start getting into these really long missions, and halfway through you're thinking, is this it? Is this the last one?
Yeah.
And then you finish it and they're like, nope, not yet. But it's not like it doesn't end and you go, oh God, I just wish it was over. It's good enough. It's good to the point where you're like, God, that was a long time, but damn, let's get through the next one. I can't wait.
Yeah. Like there was not really a point in this game where I was like, I really want this game to be over. I was getting to the point where I was like, I do really need to play other stuff, but I am enjoying this, so let's keep going if we can. Is there anything else, any other aspects of the story y'all want to talk about?
Shall we talk about the post-credit sequence? Not sequence, the scene with
Silence?
Silence and him. That was the bit that I thought was, I couldn't quite make sense of. So she kind of kills Hades at the end, but then somehow a little sort of essence of it flies out and then gets trapped in Silence, like, lantern, and he's like, oh, I'm going to like get all the knowledge from you. And I guess that's maybe setting it up for a sequel or something.
Yeah, like I don't think there's any secret that this is meant to be a big franchise for Sony, so I'm not surprised at all that they're setting up a sequel. And Silence's whole thing though, the entire game, was he was talking about how all he wanted was knowledge. He was seeking knowledge. He never really went into a whole lot of details to what knowledge he wanted or why he wanted it, but he was pretty obsessed with it. So, and they didn't really tell you everything you needed to know about that character, so that they left a lot of questions hanging out there about him. And I didn't really understand that, like you said, that post-credit sequence was kind of confusing. But and it also, to me, also that was the one aspect of it that I think was maybe just a tad bit disappointing, because this was very much the kind of game I feel like a sequel would be, you know, I would like to see a sequel in this, maybe in the same universe, but not necessarily tied to the same story. I feel like the story in this game was very wrapped up very nicely, and I don't know necessarily if I want, like, I love Aloy, I think she's great, but I don't know if I necessarily want a sequel with Aloy doing the same stuff. I would like to see more of this world, this post post-apocalyptic world, maybe separate from this. And I think they're very much setting up the sequel to feature Aloy and feature Silence and continuing this exact story. So I'm like, I feel kind of the same way I did about The Last of Us when it ended. Like, I don't know if I want more of The Last of Us, but then I saw the trailer for The Last of Us 2 and I was like, you know what? I'll take some more of The Last of Us. Fuck it. So
yeah.
Only time will tell.
I mean, we'll see, because wasn't it like a little while ago they announced that they were working on more story DLC that's supposed to come out? So maybe that'll expand on it?
Yeah, well, maybe they were setting up DLC more than the sequel, and maybe the sequel could still be potentially different. I know this is one thing we were talking about gameplay a while back, but and we briefly mentioned it, but the tall necks?
Those things are cool.
Those things are cool. So fucking cool. I'm never going to be able to climb a tower or a building in Assassin's Creed or Far Cry ever again and not think, like, man, this could be so much more inspired. Because
this might be a good transition into the way that it handles the open world, because, I mean, it is definitely out in a world where we are crowded with open world games, but I feel like this one does it. It does it like the same, but it still feels better than, you know, a Far Cry.
In a sense, it was refreshing because you've got all these like Ubisoftified open world games, and at face value, that's what this game looks like.
Yeah.
But it does so much different and so much right to make it.
I think a lot of that has to do with. First of all, I think the world is spread out and it's populated in such a way that it doesn't feel like it doesn't. It feels more organic in that way, in that, you know, it's not like every corner you turn, there's a fucking camp full of enemies you're going to fight and do the exact same thing you just did 5 minutes ago. It's just like these machines are very much kind of living out in the world, and they are the wildlife. They are what make up this world, and they're just kind of going about their business, and you're trying to either avoid them or fight them or whatever. But like things like the cauldrons, I don't think were necessarily telegraphed in such a way that, like, I stumbled across my first cauldron and was like, what in the world is this? And, like, when I went into it, like, that was magical. Like, it doesn't... You can open up, like, the map and kind of see things that you should go look at. I think this is, like, one step closer to maybe completely letting go of the player's hand in such a way that they can discover all of these things organically. Because, like, I would have explored every inch of that world whether I had a map or not. And I would have loved to find more of those things without having to, like, look at a map and be like, oh, there's a thing over there. I'm going to go check it out. Because that first time I stumbled across a cauldron was one of my favorite moments of the year so far.
You know what really surprised me, like, pleasantly surprised me about this game that I wasn't quite expecting, is how Skyrim-y the traversal was, if that makes sense. It's like, if you want to, like, climb a mountain... Normally, like in a lot of these open world games, you're kind of following a linear prescript path or something like that, or you're just like jumping from one hand-holdy bit to the next.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like you can kind of like find some pretty creative ways to jump on bits of ledges and stuff that look like it shouldn't quite work.
Yeah.
And once I kind of realized that a little way into the game, particularly with some of those more like mountainy areas, it's like, oh, actually, yeah, they do kind of trust you to just like explore this world without being too kind of, like you say, hand-holdy about
it. And I don't know about you guys, and this might be kind of crazy. I fast traveled in this game maybe 3 times, 4 times. I don't know.
I didn't do it that much until very late game.
Yeah, like there was.
I enjoyed running around.
Like I got to that point at the very end where it's like, okay, I can finish the game now. There's just a couple tiny things I need to go do, but I'm going to fast travel just so I can get those knocked out. But like up until that point, I ran everywhere, or I rode one of the cow machines or whatever, the bulls.
Striders, chargers.
Yeah. I would override those.
I only rode on those the one time. I didn't find any like enjoyment out of it. I just enjoyed running around more as Aloy.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that's same here actually.
Yeah, because there were a lot of instances where I would get on something and then immediately want to get off to go explore something, and that's always kind of... It's kind of like the same effect I had in Zelda, where it's like you can't... It's kind of hard to walk like more than, you know, 5 or 10 seconds without seeing something. You kind of want to just wander off the beaten path, and like you're not going to want to do that on the back of a bull.
And I think I would have done it more if the transition from being on a charger to getting off it was a little more fluid.
Yeah.
But you had to stand there and hold a button.
Yes.
And I didn't feel like I was exactly like running, like going fast, that faster.
Speaking of fluidity, this is a nitpick, but man, one thing I hated about this game was Aloy's jumping animation.
Yeah.
It is a little awkward.
It is it works in certain scenarios where you're like jumping over a rock, but every time she's like, you're jumping on anything, she's jumping like she's trying to leap over something. And it just, 9 times out of 10, it wasn't the appropriate jump animation, I felt like, and it annoyed the hell out of me. But again, that's a nitpick.
I mean, speaking of that, because George mentioned like other traversals, Skyrim-y, her jump animation is even more jarring when you need to like, when you are trying to get somewhere and you're like, I don't know the best way to go, so I'm just going to jump up the side of this mountain.
Oh yeah,
it's really weird.
Yeah, like you need to be jumping up to grab a ledge, but she's jumping like lifting her legs up, like she's trying to jump over something. But you're in real life, she should be trying to reach up and grab like a ledge or something like that. And it's just, it's kind of strange. But hey, what can you do?
That's your nitpick. I got two nitpicks. One, I like, the way that you can climb. I mean, they outline it for you. They're yellow. But sometimes I feel like the jumping is weird. Like if I'm running and then I jump a long gap, or like I feel like I'm running and I can jump over the gap without having to actually grab onto that ledge. It's weird to be running full speed and then jump and you kind of like stop in midair a little bit and then she'll fall down and then grab it.
Yeah,
like you're locked into that animation, and I find it kind of jarring at some points.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird too because there are a lot of other elements, other aspects of this game where the animation is like character animation is super top notch. Like Mr. Greentoast just mentioned it in chat. He said you can do a 360 aim while you're riding like a strider or a charger, and like there's the animation of her like turning around while riding the bull while you're aiming the bow, like behind you. It's actually really impressive. It looks kind of like, it's weird, but like the way she does it is like super fluid. And I just like, there's so many elements, so many areas of the game where it is super fluid and the animation is super tight that jump animation stands out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. The other nitpick I have is with when you have a quest up and you got your marker, like if you're running in town or certain areas, kind of bugs me when I'm following that and then I get to where it is and all of a sudden I realize it bounced back behind me, and so I turn around but then it bounces back to where it was before.
Well, it doesn't, you know, there's two settings like for that, right?
Oh, is there?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of really great HUD settings in this game, which is another thing that was nice. But one of them allows you to, when you set like a marker on your map, you can set it to I forget what they call it, but one is essentially like it tells you like the general direction it's in and the distance to it on your screen, on your HUD. So you can just run straight towards it if you want. The other setting is that it dependent on it's relative to the path you're on. So if it's like, it's outlining the direction you need to go to get to the next branching path to take you to where you want to go. So like if you're running down if your destination is like northwest, but you're on a road that rides east-west, it's going to like take you east up the road, and then when you hit that fork in the road, it'll change and it'll say turn right here, and then you can kind of, so it's like leading you along the path. I forgot what they call it in the menu, but that's the way I did it, and that's probably where you were having the issue where it was jumping around a lot, because that's kind of what it does. It's all relative to which direction you're running and what the closest actual like path you're on is.
Oh, that could be. It's not really that big of a deal, but it was just kind of annoying at some points just to have that happen.
Yeah, but like I said, like there are a lot of cool stuff you can do with the HUD and the settings. It was surprisingly in depth. In fact, one of the first things I did was I turned off almost everything except for the what was it? The objective marker and like the compass, I think. There's a compass, right, on the HUD? I think that's one of the...
Yeah, the compass at the top.
Yeah, I think I left the compass on, but for the most part, my HUD was pretty clean, with the exception, like, when you pull out your bow, it would, like, fade back in, and then as soon as you put it away, like, your inventory stuff will fade back out, which is nice. But you can do all that stuff dynamically from the settings menu, which was not something I see a lot in console games like this, so...
The only things that I had on was the compass and the one, the inventory thing for your D-pad, you know, because you got to push. Yeah. For I kept that on just in case I would think I'm on something that I'm actually not.
Yeah.
And then accidentally use something. So those are the only two things that I had on.
Yeah.
The one thing I was I'll go after them. It's fine.
I was just going to say, I mean, I was just kind of giving an all around call to see if there any other aspects you guys want to discuss. So,
Then I'll bring up quick. What did you guys play on the, did you get any of you guys play on the regular or just pro?
I played on the pro.
Yeah, I played on pro as well.
I played on regular.
How was that?
I played on regular too.
It's good. It's so actually what I was going to say is one thing we haven't, I don't think, touched on much is how gorgeous this game looks.
I think it, I think it's one of the best looking games I have ever played.
Yeah, I agree.
It is a sexy.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Definitely up there.
I feel like, you know, there was a certain point where, you know, everyone was referencing Crysis as being like the best looking game out on the market. And I think Horizon is kind of that game on consoles now.
And that photo mode as well.
Yeah,
that
photo mode is fucking phenomenal. 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 Blah, blah, blah. But dude, there were like Guerrilla was doing a social media thing where there were, you know, a photo mode contest and getting people to submit stuff. And I was just kind of looking at some of them on Twitter and stuff. And man, people are taking some fucking gorgeous photos in this game. I couldn't stop.
Recent update.
I couldn't stop taking pictures, like just regular screenshots in the game, like. Like, and not to mention, like, every time I would come across a tall neck, like, just, I kept wanting to, like, position the camera where I can catch Aloy in the shot with, like, a tall neck walking in the background, because almost every time those photos turned out awesome.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to the fact that it's not that this is a beautiful game in the sense that in some pre-scripted sequence there'll be a really breathtaking view of something or other. It's like you can, and any time you're playing it, it's just so. Like the way that the grass sort of that shifts in the wind and like a sunset coming up through the trees, and it all is completely just part of the world. And I feel like you can take any part of that game just wherever you are in that world, and it just looks incredible just on its own merit, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's from top to bottom, I think it's a pretty gorgeous game.
The thing is, as well, it looked great in motion.
Yeah.
Not just in photo mode, because to pick a bone at Uncharted 4,
uh-huh.
Uncharted 4 looked amazing, like using their photo mode and all that.
Yeah.
But if you ran around, it didn't look nearly as good as if you like stopped, positioned for photo mode.
Yeah.
Like Horizon Zero Dawn looked great, like no matter how you looked at it.
Yeah, no matter how you position the camera, how you move around, how like you could stop moving your character in that game at any point and just start spinning the camera and find any number of like worthwhile screenshots or photos to take. Like it's beautiful.
Yeah. Jaeger, didn't you post one up on Twitter that had like a little bee in it or something like that?
Yeah. That was completely by accident as well. I just
like a bumblebee.
I think, it was right after I beat the game.
Oh man.
I just paused the game, went into photo mode. And I looked, and there was like a little tiny bee, like a very detailed bee. And if I hadn't have paused the game, I wouldn't have even known it was there. And this little bee, it didn't need to be as detailed as it was. But I could make out like its little legs, like the little stripes on it. It was a fucking bee, you know?
That's awesome.
And I have to find that now that George brought that up.
I would like to see the bee.
I was going back to it today and noticing like butterflies and things, and you can really like look at it close up, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah. This is kind of just a fun question I have for you guys, because I think the enemy design in this game is also some of the best I've ever, you know, it's probably some like consistently, like every enemy in this game is visually interesting and also interesting from a combat perspective. I just want to know what is y'all's like favorite enemy in the game?
Ooh!
Oh my God!
You know what? I kind of forgot to even mention on this podcast, but I think my favorite are the gators.
Yeah, the snap moths.
Snap moths. Yeah,
snap moth. That's the one. I think for me, it's got to be the Stormbirds. The Stormbirds and the Bellowbacks, because when I first came across Bellowbacks, they were kicking my ass.
Oh, yeah. Bellowbacks
are
crazy.
The second I found out their weakness.
Yeah.
Man, I felt sorry for them.
I got nervous because there was a hunting lodge challenge where you had to take out a bunch of the Bellowbacks. And those, for a while, those were very intimidating. But yeah, once you get the hang of their weakness and whatnot, like, those are a lot of fun to fight.
Yeah.
Shoot. If I had to pick, I would probably say I like the Bellowbacks. I love, maybe more so because I just enjoy watching them explode when I shoot their backs.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying when you just see that giant explosion go, whether it's the frost, the freeze ones or the fire ones. It's just so cool.
And you can see their like biofuel, whatever, sloshing around in the back of their tanks.
Yeah,
which is really cool. George, do you have a favorite?
I like all the ones you've just mentioned. I quite like the chargers, although they're kind of annoying.
The bigger ones?
Oh,
the bigger chargers, yeah. The tramplers. I remember when I first came across it, and I was like, oh, it's a slightly bigger charger. But you go near them, and they get pissed.
Yeah.
And they will destroy you.
they pursue
scary.
You to, like, the end of the earth. I think it's actually Carlos posted a GIF a little while back in chat of like, what the enemies are like. That's one of the things I really like about this game is that enemies, they don't just, like, have these, like, stiff attack animations. They, like, throw their whole body at you and, like, just, it's like they're just hell-bent on trying to kill you for the whole fight, and that's what makes it so intense.
The way that, like the snap boss, when they lunge at you and you dodge out of the way, and then you spin the camera and you can see them, like they'll miss you and they'll go past you and they'll, like, roll on the ground from all their momentum and they'll crash through trees and tear them down. Like, oh man, that's just, this visual spectacle of getting into these fights is just, like, I was surprised as well. Like, the world is beautiful, but I didn't also expect it to be quite as destructible when you're in combat. Like, you don't really destroy a lot of stuff in the environment, but, like, fucking enemies, if they go tearing through trees, they'll knock shit down. I even came across a village once that was being attacked by two tramplers. Is that what they're called? Tramplers? The big giant chargers. And they were just fucking ripping shit out of the ground and, like, flinging people out of the way. Like, it was, I just love watching this game in motion.
Yeah, for a game on, like, this scale, like the size of the world, to see that amount of destruction as well.
Yeah. Also, I did not expect the world to be as large as it is. I thought it was going to be a beautiful game, but maybe one of the smaller open worlds. But
yeah,
to go from something like Zelda to this, Zelda's massive. It's bigger than this, but this felt comparable, at least. It's pretty damn big.
That's what I think, where I think it also should get its, you know, for this world, it does a good job at making you think that it's bigger than what it actually is. Because if you look at the entire map, it's not as big as you think it is, but it's so dense with stuff that it just feels way bigger than what it is.
Yeah, and not to mention it, if you spend less time fast traveling and you spend most of your time running, it feels massive, because the number of times this game would give you an objective in one corner of the map and then give you the next one in the complete opposite catty corner of it, too many times to count. Like, I spent so many, I was running back and forth like 10 times. I was like, it was almost getting to the point where it was annoying. It's like, oh my God, this one mission alone, like every time I get to a new objective, it's like cross the world map. And it's just like, holy shit. But it also forces you to kind of learn the map. I mean, it's too big, I think, to really learn, like, truly every, you know, layer of the map. But you start to pick up on how things relate to each other. So when you see something familiar, you can be like, okay, I need to go this direction now to get where I'm going.
I will say that one of the small annoyances I had was, is it Meridian, the central town?
Mm-hmm.
I found that sometimes a bit tricky to navigate because it's all kind of like a bit on top of the different layers are on top of each other, and trying to, like, you'll go somewhere and it's like, I want to find that guy again.
Yeah.
And I found it a bit difficult to, like, go through all the different streets. And it's like, am I even going the right way?
Yeah, that city's constructed in kind of a strange way. It's kind of confusing. But I will give it this. That city, like, when you stop to, like, look at how that city is built and, like, these giant elevators that kind of surround it that allow you to go down to the village down below. Like, it's a really impressive, like, architectural design feat, I feel like. It's still confusing as hell to, like, run around it. I mean, it almost feels like, you know, when you go to a city for the first time that you've never been to and you have no idea how to get around. But the way the city is actually built is really unique and cool.
Yeah, I do like the giant lifts or elevators that go up and down at the sides.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And there's a moment at the very end when you're going in that final mission where, like, Meridian's being attacked and everything's on fire, and then one of those elevators or the lifts, like, detaches from the city and falls over, but it's happening in real time. It's not a cutscene. And I was just watching it, like, where do I go? Like, what do I do? Like, I was worried it was going to fall on me. Like a lot of the stuff they, like, a lot of that stuff that you would normally see in cutscenes too, in some of these bigger and more epic moments, happen in real time. Like, I'm pretty sure, I didn't test this, but I'm pretty sure when that elevator falls over, you could walk forward far enough that it would crush you. I don't think it stops you. I could be wrong. But the fact that they did that in the moment instead of pulling you out and showing this crazy scene with this thing falling over was really cool. Because it doesn't give you any warning either. It's like, things are on fire, and then you look up and you're like, is that the elevator? Is that falling? Oh my god.
Speaking of Meridian, I think one of the things that I found to be the funniest thing ever in Meridian is, did any of you guys read the notes on their religion at all?
I read a few of them. Those are pretty long.
They are pretty long. I only read one of them because they're so long, and it's like, the vows or whatever of their religion.
Yeah.
And, you know, they praise the sun god, you know, they're all about the sun god. And if you read that one, they detail it out as, you know, to wipe away your sins for them is the peeling of your skin that you get from a sunburn to them is your sins are being peeled away.
That's so
they're awesome. Literally going to give themselves skin cancer, but to them, they're losing, their sins are being flushed away from by the sun.
It doesn't matter, Kenton. They're purifying themselves.
I know, but it's just hilarious because I'm thinking they're like, you guys are clearing your sins about also getting cancer. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's called natural selection.
It kind of reminds me of that religion in Fallout 4, the radiation one.
Remember that?
Yeah, it is. It's sort of like that, yeah.
Did everybody here, it's kind of off topic, but everybody here get the armor, the final piece of armor?
Yeah, I got it.
I got it, but I'm a little bit disappointed by the armor. I was kind of hoping the armor would just stay the way it looked in there, and I would be walking around this world looking like that.
Like a fucking, I don't even know what you
would be. Like I'm some future woman, and I got this sweet futuristic armor with a bow and arrow. I thought I was going to look like that, and I'm like, God damn.
It was cool that it gives you those weird, like, honeycomb.
The glyphs that kind of float up you. It's still cool, but I was hoping I was going to look like that.
But like,
and you could like really take a beating in that armor as well compared to others.
Yeah, which was great. It helps a lot in that final fight. But one thing I like about that, because, you know, this is, you know, there's a lot of, I'm kind of worried, this is kind of off topic too, but like, this kind of is the kind of stuff that makes me worried about, you know, we're about to get a new Assassin's Creed this year, and like, there are so many open world games that are doing so many cool things now that it's kind of like, well, they've got to really step up their game to make that game interesting again.
No, that's basically what, like, that's what CD Projekt Red did for me.
Yeah.
Like, I beat Witcher 3. Like, I can't imagine, like, trying to go back to, like, Dragon Age Inquisition or any future BioWare games. Like,
yeah, it's concerning. But, like, there are still elements of, like, Assassin's Creed. Like, the thing of, like, finding that special armor, I love that stuff. Because you can actually stumble across the room and you can see the glass and you can see behind the glass there's that armor. And you're like, I want that. But there's five.
Yeah, it's, like it's one of the first quests you get.
Yeah, but, like, it says it's level, like, 25 and you're like, oh, I can't do that. But the fact that you can kind of go in there and stumble across it and then see this armor and be like, I'm going to get that. I just got to find these things to unlock it. And then the entire game, it's kind of in the back of your head. Like, I got to find these things. Like, I love that stuff. So I'm really glad they put that in there with that special armor. Because that was like one of the few things I was like, I'm not finishing this game until I am rocking that armor. It's going to happen. Yeah.
Like going back to the final fight, the assault on Meridian.
Yeah.
That weapon that you get.
Which one?
That weapon sucks up
the like explosive balls. I mean, it shoots them off into the distance.
Oh yeah, that's
what it's called.
Yeah, that's like a.
I want that.
Yeah, that was really cool. It felt like it almost felt like it belonged in something like Gears of War, more than Horizon. But it was cool for sure.
Yeah,
I feel like I mean that part of the story is it's pretty much like a glorified turret sequence, but it felt better than a normal turret sequence in my opinion.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that if you're firing explosives at these enemies, whether it's a turret sequence or not, you're still getting that feedback of watching parts fly off of them, and then that stuff is satisfying no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, there was when we were talking about combat, just to be quick, we didn't really bring up the most that I think that I find that people find the most divisive, mm-hmm. which is the going into cover and whistling.
Oh yeah, the exploit where you can only it only ever alerts one enemy at a time.
How did you guys feel about that?
I actually didn't end up using that as much as I thought, and maybe that's because I knew it was kind of an exploit, and I didn't want to cheapen it by just taking advantage of that.
I used it mostly against humanoids.
Yeah,
like human enemies.
It was weird though.
That's where it gets a bit silly when you're like hiding behind in the same bush and the bodies are kind of piling up outside the bush and they're like, what's going on over there? And then they come over and you just kill them off one by one.
Yeah, it's one of those things definitely where it's like, this is an open world game. It's a new IP and you know, there's always going to be something. And this is like the one thing I can think of. It's like, well, that's going to be addressed. That's going to have to be addressed in the sequel.
I think the sequel, they should just concentrate on robots.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like that's the thing that's going to keep me coming back for this franchise is I want to see as many fucking crazy machines.
Like, I want them to like not just like real live creatures. I want them to go like mystical, like get a griffin, you know?
Yeah.
Just all like mythical creatures as robots.
Yeah, I mean, like they didn't really
so let their imagination run wild.
They didn't really limit themselves to any one particular, like they had a lot of, you know, normal animals like that we have today, and then all of a sudden there's a giant T-Rex, so they weren't exactly conforming to like one particular, like people kept saying robot dinosaurs, but when you think about it, there's only really one robot dinosaur, and that's a big T-Rex.
Oh my god, Jager, you got my mind going, because there's a
think of the possibilities that they could do.
Well, just think about it, like on the left side of the map there's that giant water area where there's just like a whole bunch of snap moths.
Imagine
if there's like a fucking like a kraken in there or something.
Exactly.
Oh my god. Oh, that would be so,
so much
cool.
They could do.
We haven't mentioned the Deathbringers, have we? The
giant like rocket shooting things.
Yeah, they're not really creatures, are they? They're just kind of big.
They're just like war machines.
Yeah, they're just those things are boring.
Yeah.
Wait, which ones? Oh, yeah. Those were kind of boring.
The final boss is just basically fighting two of those and some other stuff being thrown at you.
Yeah, but those were actually pretty easy to dodge and tear apart.
Those are boring, just like the humans.
Yeah, like I would be fine if the next game had no human enemy combat at all. I mean, part of me feels like that needs to exist because there's a lot of elements of the story that have to do with human forces and warring human factions. But I didn't like fighting them. I liked fighting robots. So, hey.
I guess another thing worth bringing up is, because I know you talked about it with Crispy on the podcast, with the way, the function of the focus about its detective modeness and how some people might not like it. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was just fine. I mean, yeah, you walk slow, but I found it to be pretty useful.
Yeah, I kind of wish I mean, I liked it. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered Crispy. I think that's going to be another area that they're going to probably focus on making a little bit more. Or like it in some ways, it kind of impedes the flow of gameplay when you use it, especially if you're using it a lot. Not to the point where it really bothered me all that much, but I think that's definitely going to be an area where they're going to focus their efforts on improving in the next game.
I kind of felt like, in my opinion, like when you'd have to use it during side quests and stuff, I guess I was more okay with it because Aloy is a hunter, so I guess it would make more sense for it to work the way that it did.
Yeah.
since she was able to identify a whole bunch of stuff. So, I mean, I felt like it kind of helped her character in a way because she was a hunter.
Yeah. But this is like, it contextually it made sense and it worked for the most part. And it was the way you use it to track things in the world was really cool. It's just gonna be one of those things where there gets like there's gonna be minor tweaks. Like there's probably gonna be things they're gonna do to it in the next one that you're not even gonna realize you wanted, but you're gonna be like, oh, that's a really clever, nice improvement. So
I will say I did really like the way that you can like highlight tracks for guards or patrolling bots and kind of toggle them on and off. So it's not like something like I could think Hitman Absolution where you turn the mode on and you can see all the different paths. It's like if you want to focus on one enemy and what they're doing, you can kind of turn the little pathfinder thing on just to focus on that.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite neat.
Yeah, it just added to your strategy. It's like over camps in a Far Cry game, you know?
Did you use that a lot, George? Because I didn't. The only time I used it was in the very beginning of the game. After that, I didn't even do that.
I used it occasionally, usually for more sort of stealthy sections. If I was trying to be stealthy, but yeah, no, I didn't use it a whole lot, but I thought it was quite a nice touch.
There was a specific cauldron I remember using it in. I think it was the hardest one. It had like the outside was two stalkers and the crab things and a bunch of watchers. And the only efficient way to take that area out was to do it stealthily. Like I kept dying if I got spotted. And that tracking really helped there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've covered a lot.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we missed? Horizon's,
yes.
Horizon's pretty dope. Yes.
The vantage points. Did you guys get all of those?
Yes, I
did. A couple of them.
I did.
Oh, those were cool.
Yeah. I literally went back today and got the last two that I hadn't, and then like went through the whole story because it's not told
in a
linear order, so you have to kind of put it together. But as I was going back and like doing the last bits and pieces today, just to refresh my memory of the game, I went and did the last ones, and yeah, putting that whole story together was really cool, I thought.
It was, and I like how you find the vantage points, and like you can see like broken down, decrepit things, and you're not sure what they were, but then when you activate it, like you can see this kind of like vision pop up in front of you that kind of shows you what that area looked like back, you know, before the world ended. And you all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's like a football stadium. I couldn't even tell what that was. It's been so long and it's so torn down and overgrown. You couldn't even tell what it was. But when you see the vantage point, you hear the guy talking and he's talking about how he was at a sports game or something. And this is like a stadium and you're like, oh, and it just kind of makes the world, it gives more, it shines light on what the world was like before the apocalypse. And you're seeing it through the eyes of this person, which is a welcome addition, I think.
Yeah, and I think it helps really kind of flesh out that world, focusing on individuals like that rather than just like sometimes it's a bit like, oh, random logs from random people, and that's nice to kind of flavor things a bit. But because that's one kind of coherent narrative, like a little mini narrative that they've got there,
yeah,
about the guy, and he's like addicted to drugs and has this like bond with his mum, but then his dad dies, and then she, I think, marries the guy who's works at one of the robot companies, I think.
Uh-huh.
And then he kind of resents him for that, and he's the one who finds out that the world's going to end by accident, by like hacking into somebody's data files or something like that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that was another really cool aspect of the story. Definitely worth doing to anyone who's playing the game. I would say take the time to find all those vantage points because they're worthwhile. More so than like the metal flowers and the other collectible things that you find.
Yeah, that's what this game does well, is like there's things that you can go and find in the world, but there's not too many of them to where you don't want to do it. There's just enough, and they give you just enough information that it makes you want to do them.
Yeah. Well, we've gone for about over an hour and a half, so I think we should wrap this up. But we covered a lot, and I didn't even realize there was this much to talk about with Horizon. But man, this game is definitely one of my favorite new IPs in a while.
For sure.
Really looking forward to seeing what they do with this next. I'm sure this is going to become like a flagship property for Sony.
With how well it did,
especially,
I'm absolutely sure it will.
You know, I'm not sure. Do we know how it compares to Killzone? I mean, Killzone was their other franchise, so I'm wondering how this has performed right out of the gate versus something like the more recent Killzone games.
I can quickly check. I was reading the wiki for Horizon. I think in total, what it did, it sold over 2.6 million copies for Horizon right now.
Yeah, that's...
No, that was 2.6 million units in under 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's insane.
Yeah, so it's doing quite well, so I'm sure we'll see more of Aloy and of Horizon in the future.
She's basically a flagship Sony character at this point.
Yeah, I mean, God of War looks like it's making a comeback, but, you know, I don't know how much... how much legs God of War actually has at this point. I'm really excited for that new God of War, but this looks like it's definitely setting up to be another flagship character / franchise for Sony. Maybe take that mantle from God of War, who knows. Well, I would like to thank you guys for being here and for talking about this. I've been itching to have a really in-depth conversation with this game, but I couldn't really do it because Brad and Crispy and Nolan, they suck, haven't played the game yet. But yeah, I know it's late for you guys. Thanks for being here. Thank you, Kenton, for being a part of the podcast. We appreciate it.
No problem.
And, thank you to our supporters in Discord who are listening to us as we record this. Of course, if you have not yet, you can find us at fourplayernetwork.com. And if you're interested in joining our Discord, it's discord.gg/fourplayer. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/fourplayer. Thank you guys, and good night.